When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up today.
What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is July 6th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Dean Kramer, this was really good. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts with 18 whiffs against the Yankees. He got a share of the Gallows Bowl. There were 3 guys who got that today, which is very interesting at 18 whiffs. 39% CSW, and Dean Kramer, to me, it was easy for me to put him in the 90s because he has an ERA over 5 and a whip over 1.4, maybe a little bit lower now after this one, but he's inconsistent with what he does with his four-seamer and his cutter. When those work, and they're able to really shine at the top of the zone for the four-seamer, and really the cutter was so good down in a way, which honestly, we've seen the cutter do well before and not with this command. It's great, and I should say that maybe that depends on the curveball having a near 70% strike rate and the sinker not being hung out over the plate. And because of that, it meant that the Yankees had to go after these really well-commanded pitches, right? They didn't take advantage of the others, the number 3, number 4 pitch, and that allowed the number 1, number 2 for Dean Kramer to soar. There's something to be said about that. How we frame pitchers, how we see their ratios is rarely just, hey, they're just always bad. I mean, so look, you see like Jordan Lyles, for example. Yeah, we know that Jordan Lyles likely isn't going to come through. Maybe one night his slider and curveball does, but my point is, the guy like Dean Kramer, he actually has ways to be successful. It's just, how often is he going to be able to execute that game plan, right? And there's a difference between that. So for fantasy purposes, I kind of think of Dean Kramer as a cherry bomb in this way because, yeah, there is a way for him to do really well. I've had him as a Toby and a streaming option. I think I might still have that. But maybe I do raise Dean Kramer into that like last hurrah cherry bomb tier that I have on the list and out of tier 12 into tier 11 moving next week because of that. Other guys that did super well, I mean, Pablo Lopez, I have so much adoration for not only just him, the pitcher, but him, the human. He's so wonderful. And he destroyed the Kansas City Royals, got the win, complete game shutout. Of course he did. 4 hits, 0 walks, and 12 Ks, 17 whiffs for 42% CSW, just 1 whiff off from a golden goal. So everything is cooking here. And I talked to him about it, and he pretty much said, like, yeah, it felt really good to have everything working. And I really want to emphasize how cool that is for Pablo Lopez, a guy who's had success in the past, really just being a fastball changeup guy. You know, in those previous seasons of success that Pablo Lopez had, when he was like a 3 ERA pitcher and such, it was a four-seamer and sinker, around 93, 94 on a good day, and a really elite changeup. And then maybe this curveball, maybe this cutter, but he was really trying to figure out the other stuff and it didn't work. These days, way different. The four-seamer is elevated a ton more. It's still not even like elite as far as high location. It's mid-50s, but it used to be like 30%, 35%. And that has a 16% swing strike rate on the year, a 90th percentile PLV mark, which is amazing. One of the highest strike rates on it. It's just really a really good four-seamer. He does allow a little bit too much ideal contact. I mean, ideal, that is a result that is contact that results in a barrel, a solid percentage, or a flare and burner. Essentially my way of saying, look, when batters are able to make contact on this pitch and play, it is not as beneficial for Pablo Lopez's four-seamer as it is for other four-seamers. But not so often that that happens, right? And it's still a fantastic pitch. But the fact that that four-seamer is there doing that allows, I think, the curveball to be a lot better this year. The sweeper has showed up. This wasn't a pitch he had before. Went to driveline, learned sweeper. Also increased the fastball velocity by 1.5 ticks. So it's not just high location. It's also just harder and better. But the sweeper had a 76% strike rate yesterday, the 40-plus percentage CSW on that, the curveball and the changeup. Yeah, that's what you want to see. Sorry, the sweeper didn't have the 40% CSW. The four-seamer did, 46, and then 42, I think, each on the and the changing curve. The changeup also is very interesting. I know I'm spending so much time on Pablo Lopez, but it's just so fascinating to me because he was a 4.54 ERA, if you remember. In the last 6 starts, that's 2.76 for him to get to be like 3.6. Like, yes, this is why Pablo Lopez was still very highly ranked because this is the skill set that we believe to actually be the true sense of Pablo. And he's been able to continuously go out there every day and pitch. And it's been wonderful to see it. The changeup, by the way, too much YM lock. That is, it's too middle vertically. So like things like belt high as opposed to being low. The elite changeups we see in the game are about 70% or really 75 to 80% low location. Think Zach Gallen's. Pablo Lopez used to be around there, 75 to 80%. It's down to like 67% this year. And even in this one, there were some mistakes he actually made up that didn't really burn him. But this is something to monitor, I think, about Pablo Lopez. Yeah, this was great. It was against the Royals. There's still something else to be done, actually, I think, across the board with Pablo Lopez. Just get consistent with that sweeper and curveball, have the amazing fastball. But once that changeup ease that low location, it's just going to be even, you know, more sustainable, really, in that second half. It's really cool to see. Okay, that was so much about Pablo Lopez. I apologize. We're already 5.5 minutes in. Alex Cobb against the Mariners got the win, 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. 82% strikes on the slider at 13% usage. I know that doesn't seem like a major deal, 13% usage, but it is. This just wasn't thrown before. And then he came back from the IL, and now he's actually been using this. And I feel like he took the time in rehab to get that slider back. And it's so important because the splitter, the thing that usually was just the reason for his success or failure, didn't do well yesterday. It was, I can't even like get the words out. I'm that shocked. It was 3 out of 16 whiffs, and yet this was a great game because that slider was that extra element. Before it, when the splitter wasn't working, he had a curveball that was just only used early in counts, and then he had to get sinker called strikes, and that was it. And that was the world of Alex Cobb. But now that he has the slider also to get strikes, it's a big, big game changer for him. And I think that he's not a cherry bomb anymore. With that slider, I just hope to see that usage stay above 10% moving forward. Tommy Henry got the gold star yesterday against the Mets as he went 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 4 walks, and 2 Ks. Yeah, 4 walks and 2 Ks. Tommy Henry, okay, you got through this one fine. And the slider, the thing that has been really catalyzing the recent success for Tommy Henry, was only thrown 7 times. Sure, it was 5 over 7 strikes. I was really surprised to see that. He got through it, I guess, and he felt like he didn't need it. Whatever. Very weird start for Tommy Henry. I'm not really buying into this one. Randy Vasquez did well, I guess, against the Orioles. I mean, he did what you were supposed to do, right? He went 5 innings of shutout ball without any strikeouts. 1 strikeout, but, you know, you're not really going after Vasquez for that. Unfortunately, it wasn't a win because Dean Kramer was so good. 3 hits and 3 walks along the way. 120 whip, like this is what you expected for Vandy Vasquez. You should be happy with it, but we're not really going after it in your 12-teamers. Michael Soroka, you should probably consider. Against the Guardians, 4.2 innings of 0 runs, which is great. You love that. 5 hits and 3 walks and 4 Ks. Kind of interesting to see the high walk rate from Soroka. And you really shouldn't need 99 pitches to get through 4.2 innings, right? 99 pitches from Soroka should mean like 6 or 7 innings. And what was interesting in this one, the sinker and change were not coming through. So the four-seamer command, I think, was great. The slider command was actually way better in this one than it was before the IL. Now he's like the last two, the slider has been there. But the sinker gets outs, and the changeup gets outs, and those were not good here. And that made him become more inefficient than we normally see from Soroka. So I think that does get better as over time. Soroka is, you know, has made his whole career, his whole, ever since, like, I assume, like, high school and stuff, just on good command. So that should be better. But I will say that he's okay to drop this weekend if you're looking at your weekly matchup and going, oh man, I need to get this guy for Sunday or Saturday. Otherwise, I'm not going to, you know, I'm probably going to lose this week or I'm lowering my chance. It's okay. Soroka isn't those, like, oh my gosh, massive needle in my direction pushing guy, right? That's a terrible sentence. But yeah, not the one that like is going to save your season, but he's a solid play in 12-teamers in the second half. Austin Pruitt opened for Ken Waldachuk. Yeah, he's on the Athletics now. And Ken Waldachuk getting more bulk time than he used to. Remember, he was a starter and then was demoted to being an opener. Now 4.1 innings of 2-run ball, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 3 Ks across 62 pitches. He's not ready, but we'll monitor it. Kodai Senga should go up in the list. I haven't given him enough credit, I think, for what he's done. I mean, sure, this was a forkball game. 10 over 25 whiffs against Arizona. Thus was 8 innings of 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 12 strikeouts. But I don't think I was giving enough credit to the fact that he has about a 30% strikeout rate right now. I think I was really stupid about it, honestly. So the cutter also is better than I've been expecting as its ICR, ideal contact rate, as I've been talking about more lately, is 80th percentile. So what I'm saying is that he throws a lot of strikes with that cutter, and normally the sacrifice is that when contact is made, it's really bad for you. But it's 88th percentile. So actually, it's not. And so that's been such an important pitch for Senga, as the splitter being like the biggest catalyst for his success or failure is not a high strike rate pitch. I mean, we're talking like sub 50%. It's just trying to get whiffs under the zone. It's not trying to be in the zone at all. So because of that, he needs to get something else that he's confident in the zone with. That cutter has turned into that. The four seamer, I know it's high velocity. It's very hittable. While the slider isn't that good. And those are the biggest two issues I've had about Senga, but I haven't given him enough credit for the cutter. And because of that, I'm going to be pushing him up into the next cherry bomb tier. I think probably in like the 60s or so. Something like that, where like I recognize that Senga's on your rosters and that's fine. And we're gonna roll with this just for the strikeout rate itself, and it's worthwhile. Kind of like a Hunter Green almost. But while Hunter Green, I have more faith of having like a longer stretch of success. But yeah, it's kind of that kind of situation. That's all. Okay. There are a lot of other guys to talk about, and I'm taking forever today, and I'm so sorry, but I hope you enjoy the longer podcast, and we'll talk about everything from yesterday's starters to today's and tomorrow's after this break. Are you ready to step up to the plate and show off your fantasy baseball skills? Check out Underdog's Fantasy 7th Inning Stretch Tournament from now through July 14th, where you can build your dream team and compete against your friends for the $150,000 in total prizes. So what are you waiting for? Visit the link in the episode description and use promo code PITCHERLIST to receive 100% deposit match up to $100. Join us in the 7th inning stretch tournament and experience the thrill of fantasy baseball like never before on Underdog. Good luck and may the best team win. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. Graham Ashcraft against the Nationals got the win. 6 innings, 1 run. See, he's fixed. Absolutely not. 10 base runners, 2 Ks. Last time it worked out because the slider was so good, and like really well commanded while the cutter wasn't. And it's kind of funny. You see the situations of like one thing doing well and one thing doing poorly. We always hope that we see the Punnett square of, hey, the 25% chance that they're both working, 50% chance of one of the two working, and 25% of them both failing. Sadly, it's not that. It's not just even chance. And normally when you see one thing all of a sudden doing really well, it goes back to being bad like the other thing. And that's kind of what it was here, but he just got through it because he throws hard and the Nationals aren't very good, I guess. Don't go after Graham Ashcraft after this and the last two starts. It's just not there. Seth Lugo against the Angels without Trout got 18 whiffs. That's really surprising for Lugo, who got his share of the Gallows Bowl. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. The changeup was the big deal, which is, wait, hold on a second. Seth Lugo is like a four-seamer, sinker, curveball guy, maybe with a surprise sweeper, not a changeup. It was 6 for 16 whiffs. That was cool. So I hope that sticks around. I don't really think it will, but I like Seth Lugo. He's fine. He's like a better Toby. You know, he's like a Holly almost for a what should be a winning ball club and one of the better defenses behind him. He throws a lot of strikes. I think he's solid. Patrick Sandoval on the other side of it, 1 run in 5 innings against the Padres. The Padres are weird. 2 hits, 4 walks, 5 Ks, because he can't have his changeup and his slider working on the same night. It's so crazy to me. The changeup had a 44% CSW, 7 over 25 whiffs. Great. The slider had very low strikes. And the fastball and sinker are not good. And I just don't want to do it with Patrick Sandoval. I really don't think it's in your best interest to roster him. Adrian Hauser has a good sinker that gets O-swing and gets out sometimes. And what do you know, it did that. 5 innings, 1 run, but 9 base runners, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 4 Ks. It's the Hauser special of a 1.8 whip and a 1.8 ERA. Tommy Malone, yeah, him, that guy. He started for the Mariners because they couldn't start Bryce Miller, who's going to be out for like a month or so. They said it's going to be a little bit of, a little while, which is really frustrating because it's Bryce Miller. Tommy Malone is here, and he went 4.1 innings of 1 run ball, and huge props to him. Seriously, 4 hits, 4 walks, 0 Ks. I don't care. 1 run in 4.1 innings. Good job, man. You know, that's just pretty cool. I couldn't do that. Just kind of like, all right, Tommy Malone going there for 4.1 innings of production. He did it. That's cool. Good job. Brian Bayo against the Rangers got the win. 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 3 Ks. I was scared about this. The Rangers have been a little cold lately, but I don't really want to read too much into that. And Bayo was just sinker changeup. I feel weird about it. Only three strikeouts, 12 was 23% CSW, and the balls found gloves, which is good for Bayo. Not all of them is 8 hits still. I think that Bayo as a sinker changeup guy is good, but he's more risky, I think, in that way. And without the slider really turning into a thing, he got strikes, but it went 0 for 17 whiffs. And that scares me a little bit for the second half. I think he's worthwhile to roster. Of course, I'm not saying not to. But as far as what the assessment is of the future of Bayo, I don't think he can ascend properly until that slider shows up and like is a really good whiff offering for him. Alec Marsh, 5 innings, 200 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. He's a perfect example of a guy who, if he wasn't with the Royals, I would actually be very interested in. I have no faith that the Royals are going to push him in the right direction. He has a 95 mile per hour heater with a 57% CSW curveball and a whiff heavy slider. Like, that was what he showed. And he had 6 base runners in 5 innings. I don't know. He could be a streaming option in the future. Keep an eye on Alec Marsh, but right now you don't need to do anything. Osvaldo Baido against the Dodgers, 4 innings of 200 runs. Honestly, that's great. Good job, buddy. We don't want to go after Baido right now. Zach Little opened for Yanni Chirinos. We don't want to go after him. 3 earned runs and 8 hits in 2.2 innings. JP France did exactly what he was supposed to do. He got a win against Rocky Road in 6 innings, 3 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, 4 Ks. It's not exciting. Sure, you want one fewer earned run, but you were very happy with this if you streamed him. As you got that win, a decent whip, all is fine. That 1 earned run is not going to kill your week. John Gray against the Red Sox, very disappointing. He had a very, 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 very poor quality start. That is 12 base runners in 6 innings on the dot with 3 earned runs. Oh boy, 2 Ks against the Red Sox. Velocity was down to 95, not 96. The fastball command is terrible, as it was just chaos across the zone. And the slider was fine. 7 whiffs is good, but like not so much that it negated all the fastball stuff. Like, this is not a good place for John Gray. He hasn't been there since the blister, and I don't know when it's going to come back. I like to think that eventually John Gray will get back into his fastball command, but he's certainly not there now. So I don't know. I don't know when we're going to see it. If we're going to see it, it's not something that I feel like I have to hold on to. I would love to be in a situation where he's on the wire and I'm just waiting for the moment to click and I can add him, but it might be a hipster right now where you don't know what to do. Justin Steele against the Brewers, 6 innings, 3 earned runs, 9 hits, 0 walks, and 5 Ks. It's a very poor quality start, and that's not really what you want from Steele, especially when he doesn't get a win. You're not really happy with this. It's just 5 Ks. That's all you really get from it because the ERA and the whip are not good. You don't get a win. He got singled out a bit. It was worse sliders, not too many whiffs. A little bit more fastballs over the middle of the plate, too, that helped out the Brewers. I hope that he's going to get back to the better command that he had before. It's not terrible, like the worst thing ever. It's just, okay, there's a little bit of fine-tuning to be done. Josiah Gray, absolutely don't go after this. 300 runs, 12 base runners in 5 innings. Yeah, no, thank you. Taiwan Walker against the Rays. Yeah, this was 400 runs in 7 innings and 10 base runners. At least he got 8 strikeouts. And maybe if he can be consistent with 93, 94 with decent cutters and sliders being a lot and splitters being in there, that could be pretty cool. I wrote in the roundup sliders, I meant splitters at 60% usage. Apologize for that. But yeah, the splitter can be very effective there. Bobby Miller went against the Pirates. I've talked so much about Bobby Miller. I talked about him with the Twitch chat a ton. You want to know one of my favorite things about Bobby Miller? His sinker O-swing is like top 5 among all starting pitchers. And he throws 100 miles per hour and doesn't surprise anybody with that. So, I mean, it's a sinker or a four-seam, whatever you want to call it. But that pitch is legit in my view and sets the table for his secondaries to really soar. The problem with Bobby Miller right now, I mean, sure, you could say that it was an 88 mile per hour cutter that was up and not really that much of a mistake, but Sawinski hit a 3-run shot on that and there you go. I mean, he shouldn't have allowed the 2 hits before. They weren't the best pitches either, but like seeing 5.2 innings of 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 Ks is great with a win. That's 400 runs. And you're like, oh man, that stinks. If it was 200 runs, if it was like 2 solo shots instead of a 3-run shot and a 1, you know, there you go, right? But anyway, Bobby Miller's slider needs to be more of a strike pitch. Right now, it's like 58%. It needs to be like a 65. It's a really good pitch. It just needs to be adjusted a little bit closer to the zone. While the curve and change need to come through more. They're not reliable secondaries at the moment. Do I think that Bobby Miller will get there? Absolutely. I think it's such an amazing foundation he has with that fastball. And I think the stuff of these pitches is really good. And when I watch it, he's not missing like randomness. You know, these are just tweaks that you make as you get more time in the majors. It's why I'm so high on Bobby Miller. And I understand why everyone else is not as high on Bobby Miller as I am, because now it's 4 starts of bad ERAs. I think we're too focused on ERA, guys. That's just how I see it. Matthew Liberatore against the Miami Marlins shouldn't have been starting. Should have been Stephen Matz, but the Cardinals said we can't do Matz, so we went Liberatore, and it was terrible, and we're going to move on. Don't do Liberatore. Don't take Cal Quantrill against Atlanta. Why would you do that? Don't do that. Cal Quantrill is good against like mediocre teams as he gets good synchro swing most of the time. It's only 30% this year, which is weird. It'll be better, I'm sure, but I don't really like Cal Quantrill, and I definitely don't like it against Atlanta. Chase Anderson against Astros, yeah, of course not. Brian Hoeing against the Cardinals, yeah, he's a sinker baller who didn't get the outs with the sinkers, and there you go. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, this is why we have a still ill. It was against Oakland, and we're like, hey, we should be doing this, right? Well, no, 4 innings, 5 earned runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. This is why still ill exists, especially for a guy like Erod, who I think is more command-dependent than a lot of other guys that we see coming back from injuries that we're excited about. So monitor this. I mean, I think like it'll be better moving forward, but yeah, he doesn't have the command now. When we saw him excel in the beginning of the year, it was because of his command. So monitor it. But I think you still hold on to him. You don't have to drop Eduardo Rodriguez. It's just, okay, get your command back, buddy. I'm looking forward to today and tomorrow's games. George Kirby, Freddy Peralta, Julio Urias, Nathan Eovaldi, Marcus Stroman, Yuri Perez, Tanner Bibee, and Jose Berríos are in the auto start tier. Make sure Berríos is in the lineup. It's a doubleheader today. You have probable starts of Jack Flaherty, Yusei Kikuchi, and Michael Lorenzen. Lorenzen gets the Athletics. That's why he's there. On the questionable start tier, you have Hogan Harris, Kyle Bradish, Lance Lynn, Mackenzie Gore, Luis Severino, and Ryan Nelson. Of these, you have Lance Lynn, of course, also coming in because of the doubleheader. It's strikeout-friendly stuff against the Jays. I hope that works. Hogan Harris against the Tigers could work out. He might have an opener. Kyle Bradish could do well against the Yankees. The Yankees, who knows what you're going to get. And Luis Severino's down here because I don't know. He's lost right now. Is it today going to be the day he clicks in? It's about the slider and changeup. I really hope those do well. And Ryan Nelson's worked out with the changeup lately, and Tommy Henry just silenced the Mets, so maybe that works out. Do not start to, do not touch Williamson and Christopher Sanchez against the Rays and Carlos Carrasco and Carter Crawford and Yoán Oviedo. Spencer Watkins, Jordan Lyles, Tanner Banks, the temporary bullpen, no thank you. And I also do want to mention about Mackenzie Gore. I watched him a lot before this on the Twitch stream. Really bad against lefties, as chat mentioned to me. Really interesting point. Really bad against lefties, much better against righties. Fastball command is everything. That really, really is that the fastball gets destroyed by lefties and the slider isn't doing enough. Sub 30% O-swing, which is terrible as a lefty versus lefty. Mackenzie Gore is just kind of too volatile for me. All right, and looking forward to tomorrow's games. Zach Gallen, Luis Castillo, James Paxton, Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burnes, Justin Verlander, Andrew Abbott, Dylan Cease, Hunter Brown, Sandy Alcantara, and Tyler Glasnow are all in that auto start tier. I think all of this is pretty straightforward. Sandy Alcantara is still here. Of course, it was Atlanta last time. Don't judge him for that. And Tyler Glasnow is getting Atlanta. Up to you. I'm going to do it because he's an auto start. You just kind of close your eyes and do it. But maybe you want to do the probable start because Atlanta is just so good right now. But imagine if it was Coors. If it was Coors, would you do it? I think you would. Probable start tier, Bailey Ober against Baltimore, of course. Yu Darvish is coming back from the illness, so we don't know where he's at, and it's the Mets, so probable start, but I think I still want to do it. Jordan Montgomery's on too good of a run, so you do that against the White Sox. Carlos Rodon is coming back tomorrow, and yes, I'm putting him in the probable start tier. I know, I'm breaking the still ill rules. I know. I said that about Julio Urias against the Royals, and that didn't go well. His command was off. That was Urias. Carlos Rodon has cruised through his 10.2 innings of rehab. He's allowed 3 hits total. I really do think that this is a good matchup that you're just going to want to do it. I don't think he's going to destroy your week. It's against the Cubs, too. I think it's just too fun. I am starting. If I have Carlos Rodon, I am going to be starting him in my leagues. Andrew Heaney against the Nationals. He got a slider down last time. Fastballs were up, sliders were down. That works. Hopefully that does maintain itself. Tony Gonsolin against the Angels. Aaron Civale against the Royals. I know, Tony Gonsolin, like, wait, what? Nick, I thought we were moving on from him. Yes. But Trout is hurt, and Gonsolin isn't so bad. Like, he's a Toby, and the Angels, to me, aren't scary at the moment. So Gonsolin can very well make this work, so I think I'm going to go with it. Same with Aaron Civale is a Toby against the Royals. Questionable start tier is terrifying. Charlie Morton against the Rays. The Rays in Atlanta, you just want to, like, avoid right now. And Charlie Morton is already inherently volatile, so yeah. Griffin Canning against the Dodgers. I like where Griffin Canning is at. I don't want to face him against the Dodgers. Or I don't want to start him against the Dodgers. Cole Irvin against the Twins. That is my stream pick of the day because I can't choose anyone else. And maybe that works. Cole Irvin is kind of a Toby when he's working, and the Twins aren't very scary. And Alec Manoah against the Tigers, I'm not going to rule out the fact that Alec Manoah hit the reset button and did well. Do not just see like the first 2 months of the year and be like, well, Alec Manoah is washed up and he's cooked forever now. No, he actually got a gift, which you normally don't see from a lot of pitchers, where a lot of times guys don't get the opportunity that we think highly of to actually go to the minors and fix themselves. You know, he's been completely removed. He's able to hit the reset button, take all the rest he needs to do, do all the things, and he didn't do well his first time. He got absolutely destroyed. But then apparently he did really well in AA, and I'm not going to just all of a sudden rule out that all the skills are gone or all the talent and potential is gone. So I'm picking him up in my leagues. Alec Manoah gets the Tigers. I don't want to start him. I'm going to pick him up and wait and see what we get. But can we all acknowledge that there's still top 25 upside because that's what he was the past two seasons? Cool. All right. Do not start tier Daniel Lynch against the Guardians. I know it's been a 2-year ERA the last three starts, but 11% strikeout rate, and I do not buy this changeup whatsoever. Luis Medina could maybe go a quality start against the Red Sox. I'm not going to go after that. Rich Hill against the Diamondbacks. No, thank you. Jameson Taino against the Yankees. He's been so bad. Ross Stripling, I don't even know how many innings he's going to go and what the situation is there. I don't care, even though it's a rocky road. Austin Gomber on the other side, never Gomber. Alex Faedo starting, that's cool, but it's against the Jays, and absolutely not. And Trevor Williams against the Rangers, oh boy, absolutely not. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for the support. Sorry for the late one today. Had a lot of tangents on the stream, but that's just how it goes. So my name is Nick Pollock. I mean, your BABIP's below, and your strikeouts high.